Welcome to The Mist, a show about drugs, cults, and the internet.
Bulletin board system, World of Warcraft, dial-up. There's going to be a lot of people like him who come up in the future. You know, and the internet's going to be a dual-edged sword for people like him who use their gifts for good and bad.
An internet troll really just ruining my life for me.
You may picture cults or cult-like groups in rooms or maybe compounds, close together, doing things together, maybe even wearing similar clothes, like Mormon missionaries, sorority sisters, priests, and nuns, like-minded people who share the same space. They share a vision, so they come together to make it real. This story is about such a group, but they don't meet in the same room. They don't know what each other is wearing. And sometimes they don't even know each other's real names. The thing that binds them together is a good internet connection. The group we're talking about today, some people claim it's taken years of their life from them. Some say it's responsible for ruining their family. And others have happy memories from it.
Hi everybody, Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio. Do me a favor, will you? Do me a favor.
The group is Free Domain Radio, and the man who leads it is Stefan Molyneux.
Today is the day that the greatest problem facing the world, the modern world, maybe even the world of all time, the greatest problem has started to be solved today, January 29th,
a quick type of Stefan, that's S-T-E-F-A-N, in any search pretty immediately brings up his work. He's a prolific publisher. His podcast, Free Domain Radio, has an extensive back catalog that's separated into multiple volumes, thousands of episodes.
Hi, everybody. Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio.
Hi, everybody. Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio. Hope you're doing well.
Hi, everybody. It's Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio. Hope you're doing well. This is the fall of Australia. Or
it's not going that hard for me to see Donald Trump's competence because I'm a competent person.
Coming
up to 300 million views and downloads, influence in the very highest corridors of power around the world. Amazing world-changing conversations, ideas, and arguments and presentations. So,
Free Domain Radio, or FDR, and the man behind it made headlines years ago. They were publicly scrutinized because FDR members were leaving their families. Some articles called FDR an internet cult. The height of the scrutiny was in 2008 when a series of articles came out about one British teen who left his family. Stefan is in Canada, by the way. The note that the teen left reportedly said that he needed an indefinite leave from his family.
Now, an 18-year-old not talking to his family anymore. I've had my kids say that to me. Convinces people, apparently, that they should cut off all family ties. Now, this is her message to the man who runs it.
I just wish he'd stop obsessing over parents being evil and corrupt and stop twisting people's minds and stop telling them that the way to personal freedom is to rid yourself of these people.
There are other accounts from former members and their families that Free Domain Radio encourages its members to defoo.
Like, I was one of the first to defoo. That's what he called it.
That's Nathan McCaskill, a computer engineer and former paying member of Free Domain Radio. Defoo means to separate from your family. Duh, as in the prefix meaning removal, and foo, family of origin. Some say that Stefan came up with the term. Defooing is what put Stefan and FDR in the headlines. But that's not Nathan's concern. The internet of it all is the problem for him. And the biggest issue that affects his life now is one person he's deemed a troll. It all started for him in 2006. He's in his early 30s at the time.
Let's see, I guess I had come across one of Stefan Molyneux's articles on how anarchy could work. And I think it was his first article. And so I was kind of one of the very, very earliest adopters, or not adopter, but members, I guess.
So at this time, in the early 2000s, Stefan's writing and podcasts were more focused on libertarianism and anarchism, just talking through history and hypotheses.
it was just him talking in his car and basically talking to himself as it were a microphone and just sorting out ideas in his head. And it was just very fascinating follow of a stream of thought, I guess, in terms of philosophical ideas around free market specifically and atheism and stuff like that.
What is libertarianism? Well, you know, you've probably heard of libertarianism in one form or another. You know, you may have some images about who we are and what we are. Maybe you think of us as crazy cult survivalists from Montana with beards longer than our hair. No disrespect to Montana libertarians, who I'm sure are very nice, but we're really not that. You know, maybe you think we're like crazy cult anarchists or, you know, crazy cult bitter loners. The crazy cult thing is usually mentioned. Or, you know, maybe we're like one step above or below the Dungeons and Dragons geeks, you know, people who can't seem to get it.
The FDR podcasts and message boards were where all this was happening. Nathan would hear Stefan's ideas in the podcast and then talk about them with others on the message boards. He said he did this for about 5 years. And he estimates over that time he contributed around $5,000 to Stefan and FDR. So you can donate to FDR in any amount, but the $100 a month level is the highest designated giving level. At this level, members are called Philosopher Kings. The other levels are gold, silver, and bronze, and each level grants you access to different content that Stefan's made available. But Nathan never saw Stefan and didn't even know what he looked like until 1 year after he started thinking through these theoretical free societies. It was an FDR meetup in Florida.
We all went there and met up, and this was after the big podcast, which was number 183, I think, where people began to question their relationships with their families.
Now let's talk about what I think is not so much for me, but for a lot of people, the greatest impediment to freedom, which is the relationship with the parental units. Now, the great challenge of the relationship between you, your parental units, and freedom is that you yourself did not enter into any kind of contract with your parents, anything. If we can't live that at a personal level, everything we talk about politically is hypocritical. Everything. You are not a libertarian if you spend time with people you do not love. You are not a libertarian. We are trying to get rid of the government through peaceful and logical means. We are trying to get rid of sentimentality around the family. We are trying to get rid of sentimentality around the army and the police and war and welfare and the war on drugs and the war on illiteracy.
I've got this ridiculously unfree, slave-like relationship to my family, and I was so miserable around them, and I couldn't be myself, and I couldn't be who I was, and so this presented a very good argument for why I really don't have to have a relationship with them. And I didn't want, like, I could be free, you know, I could be free of all that and just break away and no more.
Did FDR, you think, help push you in the direction of officially defooing, or did you think that would be inevitable?
I think it just sort of gave me permission to do what I wanted to do.
So Nathan seems pretty happy. He's exploring ideas that intrigue him. He's thinking through versions of society with Stefan and other FDR members, and he feels emboldened to do something about his unhappy relationship with his parents, all with support from this community he mostly interacts with online. Stefan's following eventually grows. He reaches a lot more people, and a small group of them are devoted to a lot of the ideas he's coming up with. So they come together in real life. They move into an apartment in Philadelphia. Nathan spent a lot of time there and even moved out of state to be close to it.
They jokingly called it the compound because of the cult accusations that were going on at the time. It was more of a convenience situation than an economic, like any roommate situation, than anything else. And we were friends.
I spoke to someone else who lived at the apartment, named Greg. He called it a compound too, jokingly, but also kind of affectionately. Greg said it was a communal space. They cooked for each other, they had lengthy discussions about philosophy, and he still cherishes memories from that apartment in Philly.
But that group of people, most of them left, and Greg and I are very close friends still to this day.
Did everyone who lived in the apartment defu at some point, to your knowledge?
I think so. Yeah, it was somewhat the norm. I guess it was more about living your values. Like, if freedom is a value, then being enslaved to to your family or a job or anything like that was a thing that shouldn't be, you know? But it did have, ultimately, it created an environment for being sort of more judgy about others. I remember being very judgmental and trying to psychologize people from a distance a lot.
So it sounds like, regardless, there was some strong sense of community.
Yeah, and there were like outsiders and people that didn't get it, but we would try to get them to get it. In that sense, it was a little bit culty, but I wouldn't call our group of friends like culty. It was more a group of friends. I'm still very much friends with all, I would say, a good chunk of them.
So that was the apartment, the compound, the IRL version of Freedom Main Radio. I did know about this place before I talked to Nathan, actually. At least I knew that it existed, but I didn't know how much warmth and friendship happened there. I knew about it because of a website called defu.org, which calls itself a sister site to Freedomain Radio. It offers guidance for those in the process of defuing. That website, or whoever made it, deemed Nathan, his close friend Greg, and others part of a quote-unquote inner circle. And based on what's presented on defu.org, what happened in Philly at that apartment was dramatic and full of controversy. At first read, it can seem like this was Stefan's hub, where he'd go to lecture and cultivate his personal FDR community or something. But according to several members, he only visited once, for a few hours. And several people listed as part of the inner circle aren't really sure why. So defu.org gets confusing, to say the least. Can you just tell me about the website generally?
Yeah, so I think it was set up, possibly people suspect that it's a guy named Jared something, an internet troll nonetheless, like some crazy guy who's obsessed with my life from 10 years ago.
Obsessed with your life?
Yeah, my life and every, like the group, the inner circle, I guess. Obsessed life, everybody's life from FDR, and is posting just ridiculous things that are completely out of context for me and really just ruining my life for me, because I am trying to find a new job and there's been occasions when I've been dating some girl and she'll Google my name and I have all these questions, you know?
Yeah.
And it creates problems, and who knows how many have Googled my name and just not decided based on whatever was said on that page. I've read over the page, but every time I try to read it, I just get infuriated, and it's a very upsetting situation for me, because I feel like this is libel.
Nathan says some of the things written about him on the site are from conversations he had with Stefan, conversations he thought would be closed off to only the highest paid members of FDR, the Philosopher Kings. And this person just kind of wrote things about what that private conversation was and put it on this website, defoo.org.
Yeah, and then outed my full name and doxing me, like putting all my family information, like all my phone numbers, my address, my everything, like completely outing me and basically victimizing me as like, I don't know what his goal is, but it's, I guess, to just be a troll. I don't know what other motive he has for the way he is doing what he's doing. I don't know.
So I guess, frankly, I was surprised that you contacted me back because it seems like you got the worst of it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, and I don't know why. Like, I don't know why me, you know, of all the people on that involved in the community. I don't know why it's showing up at the top of a Google search. I don't know why the SEO is that good.
SEO is search engine optimization. Essentially, Google priority.
That it's outperforming all the other creative content that I have out there. But it's exasperating and infuriating, and I feel pretty helpless about it. And the reason I'm talking to you is to sort of expose that part of the story to try and, I don't know, tell my side of things.
It's not just Nathan on the site, by the way. Jared something doxed over a dozen current and former members of FDR, posting explicit photos, family information, a bunch of contact info, and criminal records. The site has also made available some of that content that was reserved for paying members of FDR. Today, Nathan says part of his whole experience with this group has just been watching the evolution of Stefan. He and others close to the group say that Stefan changed drastically over the years. He stopped talking about libertarian ideals and shifted to political punditry and pseudoscience. And in Nathan's estimation, Stefan did the thing a libertarian should never do.
I don't know. He was not acting his values, which was what he was teaching everybody.
He didn't act his values.
And then he started like putting out all these sexist, misogynistic podcasts about how women are this or that.
Several former members I've spoken to have stopped listening to FDR because of this shift. Despite all this, losing a friend, a guru, an internet troll latching on to an inner circle that never was, hijacking Nathan's Google results, Nathan says he still looks back on this time in FDR fondly. So this time at the apartment, is it mostly happy memories that you have?
Yeah, I would say so. It was probably one of the best moves I've ever made. I was just so much happier in my life, and I started, you know, engaging in hobbies and not escaping into video games and stuff like that.
Because it was real life, not behind a screen.
When I moved to Philly, things sort of became less about FDR and more about us, the people in Philly. Because we had now found a sort of new sort of bond that was separate from that. And I think that was ultimately what broke us away from the culty mindset of things. We were bonding on all levels. We were sharing each other's lives and the ins and outs. And there was a lot of freedom to question even the ideas put forward in the whole FDR philosophy.
Do you think that freedom was sort of allowed because you were just talking directly to them, like you were just sitting in a room, sitting on the same couch with them and just talking?
Yeah, I think that allowed for a lot of unspoken communication to change the way we react to things.
Hmm.
Because a lot of it was very vulnerable and authentic. And so online communities are very real in a mental sense. Like, you can really trick yourself into thinking you're being social online, and you are to some extent. And you can communicate about things, but there's a lot of fights and behavior that would not occur in person that occur online. And a lot of anxiety pops up around online communities because you're not interacting with each other. There's questions left open, and your mind is left to wander about what somebody's actually thinking or feeling, and you start projecting your emotions onto those things that they're saying, and you have no idea how they're saying them because they're in text.
Yeah, I never went as far as the defooing, but I also had the issue of telling my family that I didn't believe in the Jehovah's Witness stuff anymore. And what do Jehovah's Witnesses do? They defoo.
That's Ricky Sisko, another former paying member of FDR and former Jehovah's Witness. Like Nathan from before, Ricky is also listed on the defoo site as part of the inner circle. He never lived at the Philly apartment, but was one of the early FDR members, and he did visit. He shares this history with Nathan and the others. But his personal history as a Jehovah's Witness helped give him some perspective on this new group he was becoming a part of.
I told them, you know, I said, I come from a very sophisticated cult-like organization. You know, I have experience with seeing how the transference takes place between people and people like, you know, Stefan, who carry a kind of gravitas or moral authority, and we need to be careful. And Greg had mentioned, well, do you think that, you know, your history with the Jehovah's Witnesses makes you see these things better than we do? Because I was kind of being critical of, just for lack of a better word, the inner circle people.
Right.
And, you know, I said, yes, I do. I do think that it gives me more insight than if you weren't raised in that sphere.
Ricky says early on, he started being critical and raising flags about trends he noticed to other members like Nathan and Greg, things that worried him. And while the dynamic was different, like families attending church together versus young solitary people sitting at home scrolling through discussions, Ricky couldn't help but notice the similarities.
You know, you were getting these weird ideological cliques. You were getting these little groups of people who defooed. So if you were somebody who defooed, you were in a special category of Free Domain Radio enlightenment than somebody who hadn't, even if you had a great relationship with your parents and they were fine. There was like a weird, like those strange hierarchies started forming based off of how much you donated a month, whether you had a little philosopher king next to your thing. And then
he means if you have the philosopher king icon by your name on the online forum.
Then there started to become moderators on the forum. So people who Stefan became close to early on would become moderators. And then the moderators would start shutting down discussions. And, you know, and so a dogmatism started forming. All the telltale signs of a religious sort of network was bubbling up, where you had your Pope, and then you had your cardinals, and then you had your, like, the whole hierarchy started forming. And I was seeing this happen, and it made me uncomfortable. Those were the red flags.
And what was the response to you when you were providing those criticisms, when you were just pointing out various things that you thought needed to be mentioned?
I started having my posts deleted. I was banned from the board. I was locked out, you know. And these are people I knew fairly well and knew me fairly well, you know. So they knew I wasn't just some troll.
Ricky doesn't think FDR is a cult. And he doesn't think Stefan is a cult leader. But he called Stefan a true believer. With Stefan's background in IT and theater, using digital media like podcasts and videos are how he made his strong beliefs meaningful to others.
I just think it's a fact. I think he really does have, you know, a kind of messiah complex where he believes that his voice is of utter importance to the world. He in the podcast where he's talking about leaving his job and quitting, he starts crying about how the shoulders of civilization may be resting on his show. He does see himself as being a linchpin to society.
Because Stefan has these strong beliefs, and because he's able to say them so persuasively and eloquently, devoted members started following his rise. Ricky and Nathan say eventually a gap started forming. There was us, libertarians and FDR members, and then there was everyone else. The us group enforced Stefan's ideas easily by deleting opposing ones.
I don't hate Stefan. I don't even not like Stefan. I don't hate any of the people involved. To me, it's an entirely natural human process. But at the end of the day, you know, he's a dude who has issues, and his gifts can be vehicles for some weird ideas for sure. So if I had to leave it with anything, is there's going to be a lot of people like him who come up in the future. You know, and the internet's going to be a dual-edged sword for people like him who use their gifts for good and bad.
Because initially, yeah, when I was thinking about this story, the internetiness of it all kind of threw me, because people were talking about how FDR and Stefan affected them. But I was just thinking, like, you can just turn it off. You can create the barrier yourself. But when you do have such an intimate experience with somebody who is projecting themselves through YouTube or podcasts, and you can spend so much time with them, it's more dangerous in some ways than I think in person or in real life relationship with this kind of dynamic too. So that's kind of interesting. That was a good point.
There's a comfort to it. I mean, even my sister started listening to stuff, and she's like, I listen to him at night when I'm falling asleep. It's just kind of soothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, that's probably not as innocuous as you think it might be.
Ricky says he still listens now. He still finds the content interesting, especially in terms of watching Stefan's evolution over time. Nathan can't listen to FDR anymore. He says it upsets him too much because of how DeFoo.org affects his life and because of his difficult personal history with Stefan. After more than 10 years, Stefan is still doing weekly call-in shows, YouTube videos, and continuing the podcast that started in his car. But this history, this long, tricky internet and real life history of FDR, I've been following it for months, and I keep wondering, what does it say about us? Not just this group, but us. We can be pulled into a world with relative ease. We can believe in it, we can make it part of our identity, and at the same time, help create it ourselves. We can fill in the gaps and get wrapped up in it, even if it's to our detriment. Because, as Nathan said, we have to fill in the blanks around the text.
Podcasts endless, fairly superstantial.
But maybe we're not the best at filling in the blanks ourselves, at imagining the world behind the chat room window. Or what to do after the podcast ends, aside from hitting play on the next one. Maybe we need others to sit on the couch with us, to make meals with us, to keep everything balanced and challenge us without fear of being deleted.
Stefan is an oxymoron, mouth propped wide like a doorframe.
The Mist is by me, Nate John. Editors are Leo Castaneda and Emily Burns, and some research help in this episode from Brandon Dean. Theme music by Kevin MacLeod. And the music you're hearing right now is FDR episode 500 by Stefan Molyneux, called The Ballad of Freedomain Radio. You can write to me on Twitter, at Nate John. The email is mistpodcast@gmail.com. And if you like The Mist, please rate and review it on Apple or wherever you podcast. All right. See you next time.